Welcome to ADHD Alchemy. Guess what? It's more than just a podcast. It's also my signature coaching program at Fitology. I built it for bright, sensitive women who are tired of feeling scattered and chaotic and ready to feel calm, clear, and finally in control. Inside the program, group or private, you'll finally drop the mask and start thriving. Together, we'll quiet the relentless inner critic, break old patterns of procrastination and self-sabotage, and start redefining ADHD on your own terms. In just a few weeks, you'll find yourself more grounded, confident, and leading your life with intention by learning to work with your fancy brain instead of against it. This is where too much becomes your magic and where real lasting change starts on day one. So if that speaks to you, find more at fitology.com, and that link, of course, will be in the show notes. Today, we have with us Emily Johnson, a certified master life coach who helps women live their boldest, most authentic dreams by working through things like making and keeping boundaries, finding goals and purpose, feelings of disconnection, and more. At She Becomes Coaching, Emily is helping women celebrate their main character energy every day. One thing that's really special about her work is her adventure club, where she puts playtime front and center and curates experiences to foster intentional relationship building among women. So, Emily, thank you so much for being here.
Thank you, Jessica. I'm happy to be here.
Could you share briefly how you came into the field of coaching and what you're finding most inspiring in your work right now?
Absolutely. So for a good portion of my life, I lived in our Twin Cities area in Minnesota, and I worked as a project manager. And during 2020, when everything changed in the world, I had just started a new job, and I was at home alone, and I had a lot of time to think about my life. And I realized that there was a lot of disconnect happening internally, and I didn't enjoy my job. And I really missed my family. I grew up in northern Minnesota, and I felt really overstimulated living in an urban setting. And so I ended up kind of blowing my life up. And I sold my house and I moved back to my hometown to be closer to family. And a few weeks after getting here, I put in a 6-month notice at my job and really like kind of needed to start over. And that was really terrifying, but it also felt important to do. And so as I started thinking about what it is that I wanted to do with my life, where my purpose felt most, where it was leading me, where my purpose was leading me. I started learning more about coaching, and I realized that coaching and project management actually have a lot of similarities. You ask good questions, you help people along a journey, but instead of it being focused on, a system or a process or, a technology launch, it's about people. And I think that was the piece that was really missing for me as a project manager, was that being more human-centered and heart-centered. And so I felt like it was very easy to transfer my skills from being a project manager over to coaching, but instead of draining me, instead of it being, like very detail-oriented and not having a lot of that human piece, it filled my cup instead of draining it. And so that's one piece of it. And I also, having gone through this massive life shift, I wished that I had had support through that. It felt really lonely and it felt really hard and I didn't know what I was doing. And a lot of people were like, girl, what are you doing over there? I don't know that you're supposed to like blaze it all. You could make like little shifts. And I was like, nope, it's all or nothing at this point, I think. And that isn't true for everyone. It was true for me. But I felt really passionate about wanting to help women who are feeling disconnected. And for me, it was like a very physical thing. Like I could feel that things were inauthentic and that I wasn't I didn't feel right in my own body, and it felt very instinctual that something needed to change. And sometimes we don't know what to do with that. Sometimes it feels hopeless and it feels like I can't possibly make a big shift right now, or I can't even make a shift right now. I'm just trying to survive, right? Like I don't know what to do. And so my work is really focused on making whatever size change works for you. You know, if that's a very small change that can make a meaningful impact, we're winning, right? But it's about finding that next right step. It's about making that forward progress and reconnecting with yourself. You know, I just felt like I was such a shell of a person. Like I felt like everything that makes me was dimmed and right? Like it's terrible. It's a terrible feeling. And so many of us have felt that, but it's hard to talk about sometimes too. And there's a lot of emotion tied to it, that you've done something wrong, that you're broken, all of that. And so I feel like it's really important to make space for those conversations and to allow women to find their way back to themselves and to be able to shine their bright light again.
That's beautiful. So much of what you just said sparked all kinds of thoughts for me about ADHD. And I think the most prominent one is that it sounds like, correct me if I get this wrong, it sounds like before your big move, you were masking a lot of stuff. And then after, you
1000%
felt more free to take off the mask, which is so, so common when it comes to ADHD.
Absolutely. Yes. I would equate it to, I felt like when I went to work, I had to put on like a new skin, which sounds kind of gross, but that's truly what it felt like. I felt like I was putting on a different person's skin to go be the person who needed to show up at my work, and that it wasn't me. And so it felt like I was two different people. And I really hated that because I wanted to be me, but I also didn't, you know, I had to give so much focus and energy into being that other version, that I had nothing left in the tank for myself or for my personal life. And there was so much of like, well, other people can do this. Why can't I, you know, why don't I have the capacity to be able to do X, Y, and Z? So yeah, I didn't even know what masking was until much later. But then once I learned about that, I was like, oh my gosh, yes, so much masking.
Right. And that exact feeling of, this is so easy for other people, why can't I get the hang of it, is often what will lead people to a diagnosis or at least an evaluation later in life. Can you talk about your path to ADHD, how you learned about this and what that was like for you?
Yeah, absolutely. I had absolutely no idea that I had ADHD. I had not even a whole lot of context about what it was. And I'm very grateful that I had a friend who had been diagnosed later in life, and she asked to share her story with me. And in her telling me about her own journey and how it presented for her, I remember thinking like, oh, that's true for me. That's true for me. That's also true for me. And after she was done talking, I asked her, I'm like, are you trying to tell me something? And she said, yes, I am. And so, you know, in true ADHD fashion, then I was like, I must know everything about ADHD now, and went from 0 to 500 in the consumption of trying to learn more. And so I was in therapy at the time and talked to my therapist about it. And I was like, I have had this revelation. And and so we talked about it more and, you know, did the assessments and I got the diagnosis. And it's been very helpful to dive into that in therapy as well. And I'm very lucky that my therapist also has ADHD. And so that's like a very lovely resource to have. But yeah, I honestly was shocked, and it was both very freeing when I found out of like, oh, there's a reason for all of this, but I also felt a lot of grief for the younger version of me, especially who, was labeled lazy or scatterbrained or any number of different ways that we tend to look at symptoms of ADHD. And so there was a lot of feelings that came with it, but I tried to lean into the relief of it and then figure out how to move forward and to and I feel like I can do for others what my friend did for me and continue to share my story and be a positive representation of living with ADHD.
Yeah, it's so generous of you to share that. I appreciate it.
Of
What would
course.
you say to your pre-diagnosis self if you could, especially having grown up in a family of fairly neurotypical people?
Yeah, I think that was the hardest part is my family thinks very linearly, and that was never a way that I thought. And so you f even if no one is actively making you feel that way, you do it to yourself because you feel other, right? And when it's not easy for you to go from point A to point B, I mean, you do it, but you take a lot of side quests to get there. And it feels, again, like you're spending a lot more time and energy on what some others may do very quickly and efficiently. And so I guess I would say that, because I went through that journey and that my brain works the way it does, it's allowed me to become incredibly resilient and adaptable and empathetic and kind. And so, I think I would tell my younger self, like, you're doing great. And all of the things that you are learning, everything that you're experiencing is going to turn you into the person that you want to be,
Yeah,
Yeah.
it, including a terrific coach.
Thank you.
What are some of the biggest challenges facing you right now, especially but not limited to the ones that come along with ADHD?
Yeah, I so I think my biggest challenge is that I've learned a lot of tools to navigate my ADHD, but it just felt like so much work still all the time. And so last year, I finally made the decision to try medication. And so I started medication in, I think, April of 2025. And that has been incredibly helpful. I think there's a lot of fear around, is it going to change who I am? Is it going to change my personality? And I'm very lucky that I have great resources who listened when I expressed those concerns and were very helpful in helping me figure out where to start and where to go and testing things out. And I think just being able to create more capacity in my life for the natural ups and downs that come with being a human in this world made such a big difference. The meds didn't change who I was, but they allowed me to do things in a more linear way, to do it without taking such large side quests. Not that the side quests don't exist anymore, but it quieted my brain. There's not so much overthinking all of the time, and just really allowed me to make that space. So instead of having, some of those high highs and those low lows that we experience as neuro spicy people, it allows me to stay much more even keel, and navigate my emotions just, I think, in a healthier way for myself. And meds don't fix everything, right? And so I am still me, and time management continues to be a thing. I have both time optimism, where I will be ready to go early when I need to walk out the door, and I'm like, well, I can't be this early. And by that, I mean like 5 minutes. And so I think that I can do 10 things in those 5 minutes, and then I'm shocked when I'm late again. It's we are who we are, and I do try to navigate that and sometimes be like, and we can be early. Let's give it a shot. Maybe it'll be fun. We'll surprise people. But yeah, time management continues to be something that is an ever evolving process, I think, and using, whoop, oh, do we lose visual? There we go. Sorry about that. Just needed to be mad for a second, I guess. there we go. Yeah, so trying to lean into alarms and reminders, and but I'm also really good at ignoring those things. So I think it's learning to be kind and to give grace on the days when it feels exceptionally challenging and frustrating, and to celebrate the days that went really well, and to look at why that was. Was there anything in particular that I did that set myself up for success? Or, and sometimes it just is the luck of the draw, but I think it's really about leaning into that resiliency and that adaptability, and just speaking to myself the way that I would speak to other people on the days when it feels particularly hard.
The internal golden rule.
Yeah.
I love what you said about stopping yourself from doing the 10 things with those 5 minutes that you could be early, in the spirit of surprise and fun and making it something like an adventure that really appeals to our sense of novelty. And oftentimes people pleasing and service, which it has its dark side, but in this case it sounds like it could be an advantage. That's brilliant. I also I'll just throw out a tip for you or whomever else may be listening and can use it. What I'll do for myself oftentimes, if I have the opportunity to leave early and I think I'm going to have 5, 10, even 15 minutes to spare once I get there, I'll take along some kind of a plan B, maybe a book that I haven't had a chance to read but would like to, or is some no new music that I haven't listened to yet. I can really focus on listening to that. So having a plan B can be helpful in both getting you there on time and enjoying a little bit of fun in the process.
Absolutely love that.
What about the flip side when you really find yourself in the flow, maybe even tipping over into that hyper-focused state where we find it really, really difficult to break away from what we're doing? Is that part of your experience? And what's it like?
Very much so. Pre-meds. And I think this is fairly common, is the getting started is often the hardest part, right? And so once I would get into something and get in that flow state, was really concerned that if I got interrupted or got up, that my flow state would be broken and I wouldn't be able to get back into it. And so, I would sit in my office and work for like 14 straight hours, and not like eat or take a break. And I have my sleep is not great to begin with, but another very common thing. But to the detriment of my health and well-being, because I was so worried that I wouldn't be able to come back to that place. And it's kind of a dopamine high, right? Like you're in it and you're feeling so good and you're feeling like, oh yes, I'm here, I'm in it, and you don't want that to stop. And that is one thing that has been really helpful for me with the meds, is it allows me to be in this place where I don't get maybe quite as into the flow state, but I also can trust that if I need to get up and go make myself lunch, or if I want to take a walk, that I can come back and continue to work. And so I'm not treating my body so poorly by neglecting all of my basic needs when I'm in that flow state. But yeah, that definitely has been a huge part of what ADHD has looked like for me. And then you exhaust yourself, and then you might need a couple days to recover from that hyperfocus period. And then that's when the shame and the guilt come back in. And it's like a really vicious cycle of, well, I did it that day, why can't I do it now? And, but you've depleted yourself. You haven't taken care of yourself. And, yeah, it was a, like I said, really vicious cycle. So I'm grateful that I am now able to, have that be far less intense.
Yeah, absolutely. And you know, with both of these things, the time management challenges and the hyperfocus, we've talked a bit about the impact that it has on ourselves, but then there's the, not so, I mean, in part the impact it has on other people, but more so the misperceptions that other people have about those two challenges. Have you found in your life that people misunderstand what it means when you're accidentally 5 minutes behind, or you can focus on something for an extended amount of time, but other things you find it really difficult to focus on?
Absolutely. And especially pre-diagnosis, when I didn't even understand that, you know, it felt, when I'd say, I like can't do this thing.
Yeah.
And to be told, just suck it up and do it, was so maddening. And because I felt that way too, why can't I just suck it up and do it? It's not that hard, you know, but that isn't the way that our brains work. And sometimes we get in a place where we literally cannot do the thing. And so it sort of reinforced the stories that I was already telling myself about how I was broken. And, you know, like, yeah, you're right. Why can't I do this? Like, it's a personal failing that maybe I am lazy. Maybe I am the worst, you know? And so now, when, especially like I have nieces and nephews, and, I talk to them a lot about my ADHD. And so if I do something, or, for me, I have a hard time remembering things. It's a big part for me. And so, or I misplace things a lot. And so I will talk to them, because I think prior to my diagnosis, we would just laugh about those things. Like, oh, there she goes again, you know, and it's easier to laugh with people. Be like, yep, you're right. You're right. I'll laugh at myself. I'll poke fun at it. So when you do, it doesn't hurt. But instead, I try to be like, yep. And this is why.
Yeah.
This is, and it's frustrating for me when this happens, or it's, you know, this is why it's harder for me to do this thing, or, challenging for me when I have to think about things this way, or whatever the case may be, and try to really create more empathy and understanding around the experience of it, because they're going to have people in their lives, their friends, other people that they know who may not be diagnosed, or may have a similar situation. And so if they can approach it with more openness and curiosity, and like, is that hard for you? Like, is there anything that I can do to help support you in that? How great would that be?
Yeah, no kidding. That's amazing. I can tell you have just such a spirit of wanting to pass on the lessons that you've learned.
Absolutely.
That's so important.
Yes, agreed.
Let's talk a little bit about structure. I think so many of us have a really deep sense that structure is good for us and we need it. And at the same time, we have this violent resistance to it sometimes, even if it's structure that we've created and tried to put in place for ourselves. Could you share a little bit about how you balance the need for structure with the need for freedom and how that looks in practical daily life?
Well, I feel it so deeply, everything that you said, and I think that's still a work in progress for me. I hated the working in an office, that 9 to 5 feeling of being contained and being told when I could eat, when I, like, here's your lunch break. No. And I don't like being told what to do. I never have. Turns out I really don't even like it from myself, which does create problems sometimes. But I feel like I'm constantly in a state of experimentation with it and figuring out what works and what doesn't for me. I'm very much a night owl, very much a night owl. And so, like, morning meetings and things like that are not ideal for me. I can do them. I'd prefer not to, right? I'd rather do maybe some, like, move my body, do some of that other life stuff in the morning when I don't have to be quite so on mentally. And so I do a lot of, like, working in chunks, I guess I would say. And it looks different every day. But that's typically how my day goes, is, I might do kind of the life stuff in the morning and then work for a chunk in the afternoon, whether it's meetings or just the work that I need to get done, and then take a walk kind of mid-afternoon-ish, and then do another chunk of work in the late afternoon, early evening, maybe take another break, and if I need to, do like a third smaller stretch. So I have kind of a structure that I work within, but flexibility is so important to my soul, and being able to, like, I live 2.5 blocks from my parents, and as they get older, they have more needs as well, and so it's, like, really important to me that I'm able to help them when they need it, and take them to appointments if needed, or whatever. And the thought of, like, being in an office and being told I need to take time off to take my mom to the doctor makes me feel crazy. So I appreciate being able to work when it's best for me and in a way that fits my life. Like, I feel like I'm trying to structure my work around my life instead of my life around work, if that makes sense.
It's an important distinction.
It is, yeah. And at the same time, could I use more structure in there? Probably. And like I said, I think it's definitely a work in progress in figuring out those key pieces of, what's sustainable to keep trying out. If there are things where I'm like, yeah, no, that's not it. In the summer, our nicer months are actually, I think, easier for me because I work outside, like, pretty much exclusively, and like, exist outside. Nature is really, really important to me, and I feel like my best self when I am outside. And so I take my computer and everything, and there's a lake just a couple blocks from me. It's really quiet, hardly anyone is ever there. And I use the hotspot on my phone, and I work from my camping chair in my swimsuit. And when I get hot, I jump in the lake. And it, like, but the biggest thing is that I'm out of my house, so there aren't distractions. So I can just exist outside where I'm happy and joyful and be in nature, but I'm not like, oh, I should wander over here and do some laundry. We're like, oh, what's going, like, what is that spot on the wall that has probably been there for 5 years, but I've never noticed until this moment and is going to become the only thing I can think about. Right?
Very
So,
familiar.
So being able to move into an environment like that makes things so much easier. But now it's winter here and it is not feasible to work outside, and going to coffee shops and things like that. I get kind of overstimulated if there's too much noise and things like that. So sometimes going to a different location is helpful. Sometimes it's not. So I think it's even seasonally trying to figure out the structure balance is something that I'm working on.
Yeah, I love the spirit of experimentation that you bring to the whole thing, and the idea that what works on one day may not work the next day, and
Yes.
that's okay. We don't have to shame and should ourselves about that. It's actually a good thing to switch it around and try different things.
Yeah,
I'd venture
agreed.
to say you're probably getting a double benefit from those warmer months when you can be outside, because not only are you away from the distractions of your home office, but also just any time we spend in nature, the so-called green time is fantastic for all kinds of brains,
Yep.
in so many different ways. So that's brilliant.
And
And I'm with you.
The water as well, like hearing the water come up over the rocks, it's the best.
Yeah. Outstanding. You mentioned also a rough rhythm to your day when you can keep the lighter stuff in the morning, do a chunk of work, then maybe go outside or somehow move around, and then do another chunk of work. I think that kind of loose framework is so important to have, because it gives us a really strong foundation to start from
Yep.
and enough structure to feel safe, but then also enough room to play around and experiment and try new and different things. So it sounds to me like you are on every right track there could be.
I try. The one thing I will say from my project management years is I do love a good list. And so that is one habit that I feel pretty strongly about, is I have like a digital planner on my tablet, and every night I like write out a loose idea of what I want the day to look like, including like when I want to go for a walk or run the errands or shower, honestly,
Yes.
you know, like where those fit throughout the day. It never, ever, ever goes according to plan, but at least I'm thinking about it and have an idea of what needs to get done. And then I write out my work priorities so that when I inevitably get to my computer and I'm like, I don't know, what do I need to do today? There's a spot that I can go to say like, oh yeah, okay, I need to do this. I need to do this. And I try to group them of like, these are things that should take you 2 minutes, or these are like the medium lift or whatever. So I can kind of feel successful by grabbing from different groupings. And so that has helped a lot with just kind of setting up the structure for the day when I know what to expect from it.
That's brilliant. That kind of clarity going into your day, I know for a fact, gives you so much momentum,
Absolutely.
and allows you to really hit the ground running and then keep on moving. Because so often what will happen is we get to the office or we get to our to-do list and wonder what we do, what we should do next. And already, before we even start doing anything, we fatigue ourselves with decision upon decision upon decision. And that lack of clarity, I think, can really stop any kind of forward movement before it even
Agreed.
begins. Yeah.
Yes.
Brilliant. I love it.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for being here and for sharing. Is there anything else? If there was one message that you could impart to anybody who's listening, whether they know they have ADHD or maybe they just suspect it, maybe they don't suspect it at all.
Yeah.
Can you be that friend you were talking about and just give that person a a tip, a verbal hug, if you would.
Yeah, I think I would say that there is absolutely nothing wrong with you. The way that your brain works is beautiful and perfect and special. And that we don't all need to do things the same way. It's important that we recognize that, we all have incredibly special gifts to share, and the more that we can be exactly who we are and show up in that way and celebrate it, the better.
Absolutely. Thank you again so much for sharing.
Of
There is
course.
nothing quite like hearing that somebody else is thinking and feeling the same things that we thought were only in our own heads. I know folks will want to learn more about you and about She Becomes coaching. For those who want to reach out, how can they find you?
Absolutely. So my website is shebecomescoaching.com, and that has all of my different offerings on there, as well as contact information and things like that. And I'm also on both Facebook and Instagram, at She Becomes Coaching.
Awesome. And of course, that will go in the show notes as well. Thank you again
Beautiful.
so much. Your
You're
wisdom and
welcome.
insight is such a gift.
Thank you so much, Jessica. I really appreciate you reaching out, and I'm so happy to be here.
Here's your ADHD Alchemy Lab Kit, three tips from today's episode that you can try in your own life. First up, masking costs more than you think. Masking doesn't just hide traits, it drains identity and creates this incongruence that feels really uncomfortable. And that alone, that feeling of discomfort, is a huge cognitive drain. So the experiment is to notice one place this week where you soften or shrink or perform and ask yourself, what would happen if I didn't try to fix myself here? Second, grief is part of healing. A late diagnosis often brings a sense of sadness for who could have been. That doesn't mean you're weak. That's just the truth surfacing. There is a question. There will always be a question about what could have been. So the experiment here is to write one sentence to your younger self and express to her everything you wish she had known at that point. Maybe you want to tell her you weren't lazy, you were just overwhelmed, and let the grief move through you instead of getting stuck. Number three, stop waiting to feel ready. Authenticity doesn't arrive fully formed. It arrives oftentimes mid-sentence. So the experiment here is to just say the thing before it's polished and let clarity catch up later. I practice this in my own life, even on this podcast right here. That's your lab kit for today. I hope you will try one of these experiments and let me know how it goes.